One day, the Sultan brought me a bottle of his favorite zombie takeout. Hello, and welcome to episode 413 of Zombie Takeout, the B-movie and cult movie show. I'm John.
And I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, we have some listeners submitted from Bodo. This is via Twitter. He said, "What can I say about the adventures of Baron von Munchausen? In some versions, I think the von is there. The movie is just Baron Munchausen, but I think in older versions, it was von."
Yeah.
All-star cast, Uma Thurman looking her best, 2 hours of exposition, 7 minutes of action.
Well, our job's done here. The next photo
doesn't hold up to my current ADD self. I still like it. Would give it 4 normal brains and 1 Abby normal brain. Nice reference. And of course, that brings us to this week's movie from 1988, The Adventures of Baron Munchausen. Of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by Tall Tales. It's not a lie, if you believe it. If you get that reference, comment on Facebook or Twitter. I just want to know.
And also brought to you by the RX Intercontinental Radar Sneaky Multi-Warheaded Nuclear Missile. When you want to kill all of the enemy, but lack the get up and go to do it yourself.
And speaking of references, nice touch not going with the overplayed Pulp Fiction reference.
Thank you. It was what I wanted to do originally, but I was like, nah, the line's in there. You kill all the enemy. So, you know, you got to let it write itself. You know, that's the lazy man's credo, at least.
Right.
Or the good parody writer's credo. Hmm. All right. So we begin in, where the hell are we anyway? Austria?
It never specifies. I was actually looking at a map trying to figure that out, and I could not figure. I thought it was Austria, but Austria is like a couple of countries away from, like, there's like 2 or 3 countries between Austria and Turkey.
Yeah, but the Ottoman Empire went all the way. I mean, for my days of playing Castle Risk, the Ottoman Empire does span up into Austria.
Yeah, so Turkey may have owned more then than it does now.
Right, right.
Yeah. So it could be Austria.
So it's a subtown in Austria, I believe, and they're under siege. But of course, the theater must go on, mm-hmm. and they're doing the story of Baron Munchausen when in walks the real Baron Munchausen. I guess kind of a 6 characters in search of an author thing. He was
kind of going for
there. Now that I think about that, I say that out loud. That's exactly what that play is. But or actually, they're for a play that wasn't written. This is a guy whose story they're trying to tell. And
with a real Baron Munchausen, please stand up. And
yeah, I mean, honestly, I could just say he tells his story. Hilarity ensues. Just walk away.
Yeah,
you know, we're close to a vacation here, and
this is our last week before our usual July break for 2 weeks. So lots of senioritis happening.
I normally say limp across the finish line. This is more of a case of crawling to the finish line. But anyway,
I spent the weekend clearing a gig of data, or sorry, a terabyte of data off my hard drive. So yeah,
and it didn't help.
Not with Skype, anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, we have. I was about to say crawling across the finish line. We.
So he crashes the performance. The actual Munchausen crashes the performance.
Right. He starts to tell his story, and we see his what he needs to do to save the town, and that's to gather the old crew up together, and come back and liberate the town from the siege of the Sultan. And he goes on this
quest to get the band back together. Another reference we missed in our titles.
Right. Since the movie largely consists of him getting the band back together, it's kind of ridiculous if you think about it.
It's the Blues Brothers in fantasy, because that's what the Blues Brothers was. The entire movie was getting the band back together.
Well, the band was together for a while. They played some gigs.
Well, that's true. In the beginning, you're right. We have one scene of them in their glory days in the beginning of Munchausen.
So then we, right. And then he goes and gets each one. One is on the moon. So we see the king and queen of the moon. He has to escape from, get around them and escape from them. Then one is with the god Mars, or Vulcan, I'm sorry, Vulcan, who is a servant to one of them. And, well, things get complicated when Venus enters the room. And she wasn't of age, was she? But anyway.
The actual Venus? I don't know. Uma Thurman, I think, was.
Oh, I think she was like 17 when I did this. But anyway.
Back on that. Go ahead. I'll look it up.
I saw Born in 1970. The movie was out in like 88, and I think they filmed in 87.
Maybe. Yeah.
But anyway, and she did Dangerous Liaisons like the same year.
And that was a lot. We saw a lot more in that one than we saw in this one.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, I think she had to be 18 for Liaisons.
I don't know.
There are exceptions, most notably Thora Birch in American Beauty, but, you know, it can get
her. Of course, but that was the 70s. That doesn't count.
Yeah. But the amount of toplessness in Dangerous Liaison, she had to be 18.
But anyway, we
continue.
Easily to get distracted. Or are we both subject matter? He escapes from Vulcan, and they wind up in the belly of the whale, literally, where he gets his last two members of the band back together. That's about an hour of the 2-hour movie, actually, isn't it? Or at pretty least, much. I think it may even be a little bit more than hour of it.
Because there wasn't much left after they got out of the fish. They kind of just got back to the original town and you know, had the final battle.
Right. They get back to the original town. And, of course, hilarity ensues.
Drop my notes for a second there.
And none of us are going to jail.
Now, I'll just say right off the top. I don't have a rating in my notes because I could not decide while watching the movie. Didn't have much time to ponder it. I was running a bit late tonight afterwards, you know. So, well, I'm going to decide that while we're talking.
You know what? I'm kind of in the same boat. I know what area I'm around. Uh-huh. It's really tough, though, between the two points I have. Mm-hmm. it's really tough.
Well, just a little background information. Tall Tales, loosely based on German adventurer Hieronymus Karl Friedrich Freiherr von Munchausen, or Baron Munchausen, were compiled by Rudolf Erich Raspe and published for English readers in 1785 as The Surprising Adventures of Baron Munchausen, or Baron Munchausen's Narrative of His Marvelous Travels and Campaigns in Russia. The tales were further embellished and translated back into German by Gottfried August Berger in 1786. These tales were frequently extended and translated throughout the 19th century, further fictionalized in the American novel, 1901 American novel, Mr. Munchausen. So that's where this all goes back to.
Yeah. And I'm trying to think, do we do the Brothers Grimm?
No, we did not.
While I was waiting for you, I compiled what I thought was the complete list of Gilliam movies that we've done so far. Zero Theorem, Time Bandits, right. Imaginarium, Dr. Parnassus, and Holy Grail.
Right.
And of course, counting Holy Grail is kind of iffy because it's
it's the Python movie.
It's not really a Gilliam movie. It's more like a Gilliam Jones Python movie. Yeah.
Yeah. This is actually part of a trilogy. You mentioned Time Bandits in Brazil. This is part of a trilogy with those three. The Trilogy of Imagination, all are about the craziness of our awkward ordered society and the desire to escape it through whatever means possible. Gilliam explained that the one theme that runs through all three of these pictures is a consistently serious battle between fantasy and what people perceive as reality. All three films focus on these struggles and attempts to escape them through imagination. Time Bandits through the eyes of a child, Brazil through the eyes of a man in his 30s, and Munchausen through the eyes of an elderly man.
We did do Brazil. I forgot about that.
Oh, okay. I thought you mentioned Brazil.
No, I did not.
I don't know if we need to do Grimm. It's kind of the black sheep of Gilliam's filmography, I think. I've seen it. It's kind of not worth it, which I hate to say about a Gilliam movie because I have my issues with some of them. I definitely have my issues with the man himself, but they're generally very well made. Brothers Grimm is an exception.
So Zero Theorem, we were both at fives.
Right.
Time Bandits, I was a 3. You were 2.5.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't like Time Bandits.
Imaginarium, I was 4.5. You were 3.5.
Okay. I thought I remembered liking that more.
Brazil, I was a 5. You were 4.5.
Okay.
And of course, Grail, we were both 5s.
Right. It'd be interesting to see how this shakes out. Yeah. I completely forgot this movie had a time period. I thought it was just random, you know, fantasy, but it's late 18th century.
Yeah.
Around this time that the stories were published. Loved the dragon cannons in the beginning. These cannons that are cast to look like dragon heads. Love that. Some of the shouting soldiers reminded me of the French taunter.
Yeah, there is a very Grail quality to some of the soldiers in the very beginning.
I swear they were doing a French accent. A bad French accent. Loved the play within the movie. I love that whole shtick where it's this. It really is the whole entire film is a play within a film.
Right.
In a sense.
It just has better special effects than what they were. And of course, the special effects of the play were pretty impressive for practical effects. But of course,
wire Gilliam, guys.
Yeah, Gilliam can do better.
Right. I loved when Munchausen finally shows up, you see the real Munchausen, you see him tearing down a poster for their show about his tall tales.
Now, Jonathan Pryce. Mm-hmm. I think that when you talk about the beginning, I mean, I either didn't recognize him at the time or just forgot that he was in this.
He's a brilliant actor, but he excels at playing horrible characters.
Was he doing a Dr. Strangelove in this, or was it just by imagination?
A little bit. Yeah, I think he was definitely taking inspiration from Sellers.
I almost expected a Mein Führer, I Can Walk, you know, sort of thing.
Yeah. Also, another cameo I enjoyed was Sting. He's very briefly in there as a soldier.
What a chief cameo.
Yeah.
But what a great joke that was. Yeah. I mean, they're talking about his bravery and his humility and what the model soldier he is. And of course, the answer is to...
Off with his head.
Execute him because we don't want the regular soldiers to feel
it. Right.
And, it took me a while to get the point that this movie was making. Because at first, I'm very, kind of off-put by...
Well, just one comment about Sting first before we get to that. I loved the contrast between his very naturalistic acting, because Sting is a decent actor, but he's very naturalistic, and everything else in the movie is absurd and presentational.
Right, right.
Love that contrast right there. The point of the film, I had some issues with that as well.
Well, at first I was very off-put by the whole, we can't, you shouldn't use reason or whatever.
Yes, exactly.
But then the more I thought about this, and of course, Jonathan Pryce and what happens here, they're not using reason either.
Well, no, it equates reason and science and logic and all of that with a loss of hope and a lack of imagination. And what occurred to me is that very near toward the end of the film, I realized it is aggressively romantic.
Well, yeah, of course.
And by romantic, I mean the original sense, the romantic period, not romantic relationships.
Because, there are no real relationships, so no, we'd discount that altogether. But yeah, it's romantic in the classical sense of the word.
Well, classical, Wordsworth. Then romantic period, yes.
Wordsworth,
In the sense of valuing emotion over everything else. And that made me like it a bit more, because if you accept it on those terms, if I, don't see it as a screed against science and reason, which I don't think was Gilliam's intention.
No. And I think it's kind of the mechanization of war and trying to shoehorn reason to justify the war rather than the other way around.
Right. getting back to the beginning of the film, I loved that everybody shows up early on as one of the actors.
Right.
in the play, who are going to be later in the movie, you know, playing other roles in the movie. I recognized Uma Thurman with a dark wig when she said hello to Munchausen early on. Then we get the flashback to, you know, he's winning a bet against the Sultan that he can get some Tokay, which is a Hungarian wine, sweetened Hungarian wine. Had to look it up. From the Queen's vault to the Sultan before, what was the bet?
It was within the hour, I believe.
Within the hour. Or Munchausen loses his head. And his what do you call it? What would you call the four of them? His, not servants, his...
He referred to them as his servants, but I guess...
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know
the
what else
to call. Did all the work.
Yes.
The guys who actually had the superpowers and did all the work. We get Berthold, whose superpower is that he can run exceptionally quickly, absurdly quickly. He starts, you know, ramping up, starts spinning up, basically running in place. The floor is tearing apart underneath him as he's running in place. How does he get any traction if the floor is ripping out from beneath him?
Well, there's a very cartoon...
there's a lot of cartoon logic working. In this movie, yeah. Logic, cartoon physics, yeah.
Taking the top of the rope to tie it to the bottom.
Yeah, that was they're trying to escape from a balloon that's going down, and they're trying, you know, they're on the rope and they need more length to the rope, and so Munchausen just cuts the part above him, and they actually hang there for a little bit until I guess somebody looked up. But back to that flashback scene, the torture organ.
Yeah, I was just going to say, the first ding I really put to this movie is the torture organ, which is, I mean, it's the Monty Python bit with the mice, only they used...
Yes, you're right. Okay, you're right. It is. I was thinking of something out of a trauma film. It reminded me a lot of Bloodsucking Freaks, which we need to review. But yeah, you're right. It is the mice. I totally forgot about that. And then there's this whole opera about torture. That was a bit difficult. Even though it was like three short songs, it was hard to get through.
I mean, I did like The Eunuch's Life is Hard.
But
other than that, you're right. It is very throwaway.
And not just throwaway, difficult to get through and throwaway. Utterly pointless and hard to listen to. There was something very creepy about Munchausen's smile, and I don't know if it was a prosthetic or something John Neville did with his face, but it was disturbing. loved after that little fantasy, that little flashback, the little girl taking out the Reaper. I have little girl 1, Reaper 0 in my notes. I mean, the Reaper comes back because it's a Reaper, but...
They are at war throughout the whole movie, aren't they? The girl and the Reaper.
Yeah. Incidentally, she was played by Sarah Polley, who is still a very active actress today. Okay. I was going through my notes. I have things we already talked about, like putting down science and Price as the officious leader of the town. I don't know if I've ever liked the Jonathan Pryce character, but he's a great actor. All I really associate him with is this and Game of Thrones.
Brazil.
Okay. I forgot about Brazil.
What else? I think I saw him on Broadway in Miss Saigon, actually.
But all I really remembered going into this viewing today, and I'd seen this before, but many years ago, was that flashback scene with the Sultan, the bit with Robin Williams, and the recreation of the birth of Venus. Not even the rest of that scene. Yeah, I did remember the birth of Venus.
I remember Eric Idle. I think he's, of course, the funniest of the...
Yeah, of course, because it's Idle.
...cast here. I remember, you know, actually, one of the effects I really do remember, and we're just up to this part of the movie, is the effect of them sailing on the moon.
Yeah, yeah. Before we get to that, as they're escaping, there's a Wilhelm.
Oh, really?
One of the soldiers gets hit, there's a Wilhelm. But yeah, as they're going up and they get shot as they're just getting near the moon, they get hit by one of the warring factions. And apparently there's an ocean that leads to the moon.
Yeah.
It was very Méliès, very, you know, trip to the moon. Now then we get to Robin Williams. Again, one of my, probably my only real criticism of the film, because if I look at it as romantic and, you know, disregard the shitting on science and reason, my only real complaint is that Williams needed an editor.
Well, normally I think they let him run a bit more on his own, but I think he actually had a script.
No, from what I recall, I think he was improvising it all. I think he did improvise.
But I mean, the King of the Moon is an interesting idea because it is the battle between the body and the head.
Yeah, absolutely. But this was, I forgot to check the year of Live at the Met, but this was like right and square in the middle of his cocaine years. Mm. So Williams was kind of full blown, just on 11 ranting, absurdly. And it just got a little old for me.
Well, I think there was a concept he had to stick to, because when the head wasn't on the body, he was thinking of the loftier goals of life.
He had a character and a basic premise to stick to, but I think he improvised a lot of it. I actually forgot why they went to the moon until Berthold showed up.
And then when they stick the head back on, he's a prisoner of his own desires.
I get the idea, and it's an interesting idea. I like that dichotomy. I just think William's absurd, you know, intensity just took away from the what is a very interesting idea.
I couldn't see it played any other way other than absurd, though, because it's, you know, a disembodied head flying
around. The movie is absurd.
The head getting screwed back on and then flying back off and then back on again.
Reminded me of, and this is an old reference that, you know, and the only one people our region slightly older will get, Buck Rogers. There was this one civilization who could remove their heads.
Really? I don't remember that one.
It was around the time they introduced the Birdman.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you remember that. Then we get to the rope gag, which I loved. Great example of cartoon physics.
Tying a rope to the end of the moon kind of thing. Yeah.
And that's what it was. It wasn't the ship. It was climbing down from the moon, right, to get away.
Yes, it was a crescent moon. So he tied a rope to the end of it. And just, of course, space. And you could, and then seeing the lines of longitude and latitude on the planet Earth and stuff too. Just crazy, you know, post-Victorian, like, this is what you'd see up there.
And you know, they don't have quite enough rope, and so they fall into a volcano and end up in the domain of Vulcan, the wasn't the god of war, was he?
Yes.
Well, he was the god of war. Okay. I don't exactly remember Greek versus Roman. He's Roman.
Oh, wait a minute. Don't they call her Venus, but they call him Vulcan?
I did look that part up. I just forgot what Vulcan was the god of.
They don't call her Aphrodite, though.
Aphrodite was Greek. Venus was Roman. I checked that because I was expecting her to be Aphrodite.
Okay.
Vulcan and Venus were both Roman. They did have that straight. I just forgot what Vulcan was the god of.
Wouldn't Mars be Roman?
No, they're Roman. Vulcan is Roman. I checked that. I Googled that. I just forget what he was the god of. They're shouting of their demands, which they almost seem to have like a labor union angle going when they first crashed.
Yes.
They didn't really do anything else with it. Reminded me of the Crimson Assurance.
Yes. It reminded me of the Holy Grail with the argument of the,
Yeah, that too. Incidentally, sidetrack. I'm watching this Star Trek themed role-playing game, Clear Skies at the moment. There's a Ferengi NPC and it's set right after the Dominion War. So I was looking up the Ferengi and certain aspects of the Ferengi because on Memory Alpha, the wiki, because I'm not super familiar with them. The Ferengi are basically the Crimson Assurance.
Yes.
I just put that definitely together.
In fact, I guess they came up a little after Time Bandits. So yeah, totally.
They are the Crimson Assurance. Anyway, back to the movie. The line about Vulcan building nuclear bombs and explaining their benefits was just a bit heavy-handed. That's my other only complaint about the film.
Well, yeah, where's the fun in that kind of thing? I mean, total...
To switch to a different filmmaker, it was that moment when a character in a Kevin Smith movie turns into Kevin Smith. It happens in all of them. A character will turn into Kevin Smith. This is that moment. It was just when the subtext became text, very intentionally. Did like the recreation of The Birth of Venus by Botticelli. A little bit off, but nicely done. Yeah, she may have been 17. Okay.
Yeah, I guess
and if you look closely, there is, I think, a glimpse of Areola.
I didn't notice.
I think so. In one shot.
I didn't Virgil, pause or notice.
Of course, after they put her dress on and they talk for a bit, Munchausen dances with Venus for a while, and Vulcan gets very jealous. And Berthold dancing to distract Vulcan was just painfully awkward. Like, I have a certain awkwardness tolerance, and Idol just smashed right through it.
Yeah, it started. I think that's the point where this started to get very Santa Claus Conquers the Martians.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of like, wait, why would he do that? You know, kind of thing. And why would that even work? The interesting part of this is their relationship, of course, Venus and Mars, are the opposite of the King and Queen of the Moon.
Yeah.
Where they're trying to cram both of these parts of human nature together.
Right.
I think that's when I realized I started getting like the story all together, you know, that every story is kind of a story about human nature, the Baron growing
old. Yeah.
The but moon you, trying to perfect himself, and then but these guys trying to coexist.
Use of the word cram was interesting there, because it kind of speaks to the problem of the film. Too many ideas.
Well, I mean, it's covering just these parts of human nature.
Yeah, I get that, but there's a lot he tried to cram into one movie. It reminds me of one of the two Satoshi Kon films we haven't reviewed, probably the one I'd be least interested in reviewing, Paprika, his last film. Visually, it is stunning. Story's kind of crap. It's based on a novel. I've never been a fan of the story. Visually, it is amazing. Visually, this movie is incredible. This is visually Gilliam at the top of his game.
Yeah.
Doing what he does best. Story gets a bit messy. Though I did like the effect when Vulcan throws them into this like whirlpool in his forge, they're sinking to the surface, as I put it in my notes.
Right. The whole going upside down in the water.
Yeah. That was bizarre, but beautifully shot.
Yeah.
And then we get Jonah and the whale. They get swallowed by a giant fish.
They kind of they touch upon when they're in the whale. Of course, It's when it's about settling into your life. Of course, right. Forgetting what you wanted to set out to do where you know when you were younger.
Right. I love the whale itself, though. Very guy in a rubber suit.
Oh yeah, totally. I didn't even know if it was a whale. It was some sort of crazy sea monster, which I'm not sure why they...
Oh, yeah. It looks like a fish. It's a fish with a blowhole. It's a giant fish with a blowhole. That's why we're saying whale.
Yeah.
But it doesn't look like a whale. Love that we, inside the fish, see who Munchausen really is.
Oh, at the older...
Yeah. When he starts playing cards, we get a glimpse of who he really is. Yeah, who he would have been if he grew up.
And he was just tired from the beginning. I mean, he had some, you know, things that made him feel younger.
Right.
But
and that shortly after that, we get, you know, they leave, they get out of the whale. They make the whale sneeze. And I had to think about that for a minute. Whales have blowholes. That's how they breathe. So a sneeze, if a whale could sneeze, I don't know if they can sneeze, would go out the blowhole.
Well, they even foreshadowed that in the play at the very beginning about the little use of snuff.
Yeah.
And getting out of the sea creature then.
Right.
Which I'm not sure why they had to do, honestly.
Yeah. So they go out the bullhole. They end up right by the town, country, city, whatever you want to call it, where they left, where the war is going on.
I was glad that the last two were together in the whale, so they didn't have to go on one more quest.
At that point, Munchausen starts explaining this plan to his men, you know, drawing in the sand and everything, and they're dead asleep. And she explains to them they're old and tired, they can't do it anymore. And that's kind of when I got a glimpse of a point to the movie. One of two points. It's either, it might be both. It might be Munchausen is, you know, the man child who never grew up. Or it's this lesson of, you know, eternal hope and never, quote unquote, growing up. And, you know, never selling out, basically.
Yeah. And, you know.
Which I think is more the point.
Yeah. And staying true.
Yeah. Don't sell out.
It sort of does give you life, you know? It does.
Yeah.
You know, you're only as old as you feel sort of thing.
Right, right. That whole thing. Loved the choreography in the final battle. There's a great gag with the Sultan and Price's character under a tent that's been collapsed, where they're just narrowly escaping all of these blades.
It is one of the most ridiculous battle scenes in cinematic history.
Nice bit. I know the movie complains about science, but there's a nice bit of science I have to give it credit for. There's a bullet shot, and Bertholdt, Idol's character, chases after the bullet to catch it. He reaches out to catch it, and it's too hot.
Of course.
Love that they actually establish that, yes, bullets are hot. Yeah. So he has to redirect it. Then after the battle, of course they win, the good guys win.
Yes.
And we cut back to the theater, and it's Munchausen telling his story in the theater, kind of making you question if any of it really happened.
Right.
Love that. They walk out of the theater, you know, he walks out of the theater to lead everybody out to prove it happened, to prove that the Turks are not at the gate anymore. Get shot by Price. And then we get an interesting cameo, I think. Was that Terry Jones as the Reaper?
I thought so, but it's credited to somebody else.
Okay, because it looks a lot like Terry Jones.
Because, I had to, switch the X-ray on because I watched it on Prime.
Okay.
To see who that was. And they have it it's credited to somebody else. But that looks a hell of a lot like Jones.
Yeah. Then, of course, he dies. But then, how did they bring... I actually kind of forgot how they brought him back to life. Oh, no, he dies, and that's when it becomes a tall tale again.
Yeah.
That's when they go back to... After he dies is when they go back to the theater. I had that a little backwards in my notes. And then he leads everybody out, and then the Turks are gone, and happy ending. I did like the Henry Salton daughter capper on the very end. Because there's this bit at the beginning where Sarah Polley's character sees a poster of her father's theater company. It says Henry Salt and son. She crosses that son and writes daughter. And he has it printed as daughter at the end. I did enjoy that. One last bit of trivia. When the production finally came to a successful closure, several of the actors commented on the rushed tightness of the whole project. Said Eric Idle, quote, "Up until Munchausen, I'd always been very smart about Terry Gilliam films. You don't ever want to be in them. Go see them, by all means. But don't be in them. Fucking madness." So, no sequels or remakes. There should never be a sequel or a remake to this.
Who would want to come near this with a 10-foot pole, you know?
For better and worse.
This is madness. I mean, this is kind of, it's a different telling of the same story, so you can't really call it a remake, but
right,
like something from the 40s.
Yeah. Did you notice the credit at the end of the credits, the thing at the end of the credits?
Right.
It specifies that it is a distinct film separate from the one made in 42, 43 that had the same title. So on to Brains.
On to Brains.
I think I have to recommend it on the visuals alone. I think I'm going to settle on 4.
Yeah, I'm setting with four. I was so torn between 3.5 and 4.
I was honestly not sure if I was going to go 3.5 or 5 until we talked about it, because visually it is stunning.
Right. Visually, it's stunning. I think it makes some interesting points. There's just some absurd scenes
that are just too messy.
And actually, the version I watched, DVD wise, I guess, or film wise, it was not very well restored.
Oh, okay.
It was, I mean, it's on Prime, and it was a
Right.
pretty rough looking
Oh,
version,
wow.
honestly.
Okay. Mine looked
So.
fine. That's interesting. So what have we learned?
What the hell have I learned? That the finish line is just a few crawls away.
And I learned that a modicum of snuff can be most efficacious. All right, that's it for the Adventures of Baron Munchausen. Until 3 weeks from now, mid-March, when we'll be reviewing How to Grow a Band. It's a documentary about one of my favorite bands, Punch Brothers, leading to a two-parter of documentaries. We're going to be doing a documentary about DS9 after that. I'm almost done with season one of DS9,
Oh, yeah.
so I'll be catching up a bit during the break. I don't think I'll get through all 7 seasons.
They
I
get
just
better as after the
Oh,
first
I
season.
know, but it's like there's like 7 seasons. I don't think
Yeah.
I was watching last night, and I was, for some reason, I thought there were only four. I'm thinking maybe I
Oh.
can before we come back. I was like, I saw there were seven. I'm like, no.
It was only Enterprise that got cut short.
Okay. But I did see the first 2 seasons when they aired. I could have just cut straight to the end of season two for the Dominion War, which
Yes.
I, for those who haven't heard me talk about this before, I stopped watching DS9 right before it got really good.
Yes, you did.
So I've been catching up. I decided to start with the beginning because it had been too long. So, but yeah, I'll be through at least season two. I'll be up to the Dominion War. So I'm curious to see that documentary. Anyway, until then, of course, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you
There you
are.
are.